So we start the chapter on towards the supreme secret, which is chapter 21 of Essays on the Gita. It is part of the chapter 18 of the Gita, which is, as we know, the longest chapter with 72 slokas. And in a way, it is a chapter which is at once a detailed exposition of all that has gone so far, as well as we come toward the end, it's also a summary. So, mainly from the Gita, it is referring to the slokas 49 to 56, 8 slokas. So, essentially what Sri Krishna is saying is that, well, if I have to summarize in my own way, there is a kind of realization which is of a outer nature, where you don't engage yourself outwardly in activities, you minimize them, restrict them, sannyas as it is called, because the chapter is called Moksha Sannyas Yoga. So you involve yourself less and less, and thereby you arrive at the inner freedom or moksha. This was the prevalent view at that time. Even now, many people still feel this is the view. This view has its own validity. Sri Krishna is not contesting that. But he says, if you want something greater and completer. So he is not telling us just another way. One is through sannyas you can arrive. Other is, which he uses the word, tyaga. So he is not saying you will arrive at the same thing through sannyas or tyaga. Sannyas can lead us to moksha by cutting off all outer activities, outer relationship. There is an echo. Whereas tyaga takes us, does the same thing, except that in tyaga we don't have to leave anything outwardly. This is the crux of the whole matter. So whatever has to be left is from inside. That means attachment, that means wanting, craving, desire, that means obviously anger, which is born of desire and the frustration, that means fear. These are the things that we have to learn to leave from within. This is the main thing. And if we can do that, then we need not leave the work. We can engage in every kind of work. So these are the two paths. One is that you have to leave work, because if you work, ego will come in. That's how it was felt. The sense of doership will come in. You are the doer. Then there will be expectation, anger, etc., etc. But the Gita's starting point is that Arjun is being asked to fight a war. And it's not just an ordinary war. It's a war on which depends the fate of a civilization, fate of a nation, the direction which humanity will take. So it's a very important war which Sri Krishna asks him to fight. And Arjuna has started by saying, I don't want to fight because I'll incur sin. This was the prevalent idea, that if you engage firstly in action, it binds you. And if it's a ghora karma, the kind of action that he is being asked to do, it will lead to not just an ordinary bondage, but to sin. This whole Gita is an answer to that, which is everybody's question, that it to find God, do I have to withdraw into a forest? Do I have to leave life? Do I have to leave relationships? Do I have to leave work? Do I have to leave this? So that leaving is still very strongly imprinted upon the human mind. Now, Sri Krishna doesn't negate it. He says, yes, by leaving you can find the Akshara, the silent Brahman. You will enter into a state of stillness, a state of inner silence, and you will be liberated from the outer world. Yes. But he goes on to say there is something greater. Now it's not just that two paths will lead you to the same goal, but you will lead to something greater, and that is identification with the supreme personality of the Godhead, Purushottama. So those who renounce the world outwardly, that is sannyasa, they to get freedom, but it is only freedom. There is something more than freedom, and that Sri Krishna is asking Arjuna to take it or leave it. And the whole path is about arriving at something greater than liberation, greater than just freedom, inner freedom. And it is to participate in a divine action in the world, because that's the whole logic and theory which we have been speaking about. So how to do it? Now we are at 8 of the main slokas from 49 to 56, where Shri Krishna in a way summarizes the practice part. So what is that practice? It's called towards the supreme secret. The supreme secret is yet a mystery. It will come in the next chapter. So in the supreme secret, is taking us still further. And I'll read on page 527 very beautifully, after sharing so many things. Shri Krishna makes a great and bold statement on page 526, the last line. It is only the strong and few who can move through freedom to freedom. Now we can understand why the mother insisted on this. That in freedom we make a choice. See, freedom to freedom is that you have a choice and yet you choose consciously the divine. Another is where you are bound by various beliefs, practices, and therefore willy-nilly you are engaged. And then if you make a conscious choice, then there is a whole journey of evolution. Few lines below on page 527 about the Gita. It lays down a firm and sure but very large way of ascent, a great dharma, and then it takes us out beyond all that is laid down, beyond all dharma. Dharma, of course, we know. Dharma is the, we can say, the law of life. Now, ordinarily, we cut life into two pieces. There is dharma, things to be done, and there are things not to be done. So yes, now the Gita says a very wide way of ascent, the great dharma, into infinitely open spaces, divulges to us the hope, lets us into the secret of an absolute perfection. So here it's not just the liberation that the Gita is promising us, but perfection. So liberation is freedom from the lower nature. Perfection is that our human nature becomes one with the divine nature. So there is no difference in the sense that the divine who occupies every space. Thought becomes one with the divine who thinks, feels, acts, wills in us. So that's the perfection. Founded in an absolute spiritual liberty, and that secret, Guhyatamam. Guhyatamam is the substance of what it calls its supreme word, that the hidden things, the utmost knowledge. And then it starts stating the message before it takes us to that supreme secret. Supreme secret, I feel like, you know, we should just know where he's leading us. After all the dharmas he will tell us, he's teaching us the way. After everything, he will tell us. That's the supreme secret, next chapter. But it's good to remember that, where he is taking us. He will tell us, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja. Aham tva sarva pape bhayo moksha ishyami masucha. And before that, he gives us the way also. Man mana bhava madbhakta madhyaji ma namaskuru. Be full of me, full of my minded, become my devotee, lover, and I'll free you from everything. This is the great promise. And then there are no do's and don'ts of life are completely gone after that. Because sarva dharman parityaja. You have to, your only dharma is to obey the divine impulsion in you. That's it. So it's not like do anything, but obey the divine impulsion, and no other mental or other standards, yardsticks, however high, they are gone after that. So, and first the Gita restates the body of its message. It summarizes the whole outline and essence in the short space of 15 verses, lines of a brief and concentrated expression and significance that miss nothing of the kernel of the matter, couched in phrases of the most lucid precision and clearness. So what is the problem? First it says the problem is of life and action. We all know when we act, we come into the external consciousness. We become as if subject to many of the forces which are operating and acting. And therefore, action has been normally told as that it is a kind of bondage. Because the moment we act, there will be these forces which will catch us. So the ascetic solution is page 427, few lines below, 527. The easiest way is to give up the problem as insoluble. Life and action as an illusion or an inferior movement. So there are people who don't say, see in Shankaracharya itself, this came. Initially it was, it's all an illusion. But, you know, realizing that you can't live, you have to do things to live life. So he would say that it is an inferior movement. That's how we had the great controversy over one of the verses of the Isha Upanishad. Kurvan nevehe karmani jijivishe chataṃsama. Evam tvai nānyeti pantha. Na karma lipyate nara. So basically, Yajnavalk says that you, while engaged in action, you should wish to live 100 years. No, it's a very powerful statement. And he goes on to say, thus and not otherwise have men found perfection. Evam tvai, nānyeti pantha, not through any other means. Na karma lipyate nara. If you act, go this way, then the karma's bondage will not be with you. So this this sloka and others, particularly this sloka, even Sri Aurobindo in his commentary says that was tweaked by Shankaracharya because this is strange. According to the typical Vedantic doctrine, as it is understood today, not the original Vedanta, karma is a bondage, but you can't do away. It's like a necessary evil. So slowly you do sattvic karma, then you engage in certain ritualistic worship and do the minimum which are necessary for life sustenance. And finally, you have to drop it for the jnana. This is the traditional understanding of illusionism or illusionistic Vedanta. And that's what Sri Krishna is correcting. He wants to correct because Arjun naturally says, what if I in the war I die? I will not perform those highest things. So Sri Krishna is correcting it. He says that is the easiest way. Life and action is an illusion or an inferior movement of existence to be abandoned as soon as we can rise out of the snare of the world into the truth of spiritual being. That is the ascetic solution, if it can be called a solution. Now, this is again, several times, you know, these quotes people put, single liners, and suddenly they put, this is so dangerous. Now you see, just read only this sentence, forget the background. The easiest way is to give up the problem as insoluble, life and action as an illusion or an inferior movement of existence to be abandoned as soon as we can rise out of the snare of the world into the truth of spiritual being. If you miss the stress, you say, see, Sri Krishna is saying the same thing. And people have interpreted like that, incidentally. But the next sentence, that is the ascetic solution, if it can be called a solution. You see, the other time we were talking about the Gordian knot. So Gordian knot was a knot by you know, King Gordius, who had, there was a knot he had made. He said, whoever will open it will conquer the world. So everybody tried, they couldn't. So Alexander came. Alexander took out the sword and cut it. Now, after that, the interpretation is very strange. Most people, when you read the Gordian knot, which is now a phrase used in English language as a difficulty which you can't solve easily. So they say Alexander solved it, but he didn't solve it. And that's why my take is, he conquered only half the world, not even that. He went back from the river Jhelum. He didn't solve it, he cut it. So cutting away a problem is very easy, and mother would say, that's why when people wanted to change departments, so she would say that by changing the department, your nature doesn't change. So wherever you will go, you will face the same difficulty. So what is important is not changing the department, not changing people. It is to change yourself. This is the secret. So this is the fundamental thing. And then Shri Krishna takes up the teaching. And then we come to... Okay. Page 528. He first gives us the chain. What is the chain? Second paragraph. Eighth line in the second paragraph. Sixth or seventh line. The difficulty of human action. So, Sri Krishna is taking it in real earnest. What is the difficulty? The difficulty of human action is that the soul and nature of man seem fatally subjected to many kinds of bondage. What are these bondages? Probably he will say wife, husband, friend, father, mother, job, money. That's what we normally think. Now let us listen to Sri Krishna. All human action, difficulty of action is that it's subject to many kinds of bondage. The prison of the ignorance. First thing is we don't know what should be done or not done. We are ignorant how to do it. The meshes of the ego. So Sri Krishna is not letting us have comfort zone that people around are the problem. He is telling us Atmane Vatmano Bandhu Atmane Vripuratmana. The problem is in you. The solution is in you. First thing we have to be very clear about. The chain of the passions. The hammering insistence of the life of the moment. We are just driven by, you know, there are people who have to go. I have seen this and I have found it so surprising. There was a man who was to come to Pondicherry. And he was telling me a story. He says, I decided to come. My friend, he wanted to come with, you know, you want to go with family to the divine. So he also thought so. So as he's coming, his friend said, Pondicherry, we can go anytime. Anyways, can we spend some time in Hyderabad? He said, yeah, nice places to see. So he saw Hyderabad, they saw. By then, you know, they missed the whole journey because something else came up and he came back. Then it took him several years to come back to that point where he would go again. And this is where he is reminding us that the ego, the chain of the passions, the hammering insistence of the life of the moment. Oh, I must do this. Oh, I must see this. And that's how they miss. An obscure and limited circle without an issue. This is the bondage. The soul shut up in this circle of action has no freedom. No laser or light of self-knowledge to make the discovery of itself and the true value of life and meaning of existence. There are a series of things which when mother was asked, how should I be? For example, with the family, like especially because you have to realize the divine, what should be my attitude? What should I practice? Mother says in one word, detachment. Then again he says about something else. She says detachment. So the series of questions, he simply uses the word detachment. And of course, there's the inner detachment. You are in life, you are with everybody and everything. And yet an inner detachment. This is the one of the first things that... Whereas that... on the last two lines on the same page, the ascetic renunciation and the way of the Gita are both agreed that it must first of all renounce this absorption. So people often say, Shrivindu says, all life is yoga, I can do anything. This is absurd. Otherwise then no yoga is required. You can do anything. Anyways you are doing any which way. So this absorption, the people who often, you know, come and say that, what can I do, you know, in my life, I have to look after this, that. It's your priority. As simple as that. Some people from morning till night, oh, we have to take care of the house, the family. You can do all these things. But inwardly, if your priority is the divine, then it makes the world of difference. And that's what he is reminding us. First thing is that this absorption must cast from it the external solicitation of outward things. One of the worst is, you know, seeking approval of others, I must say. What will somebody think? What will somebody say? And nowadays people understand the least if you want to have is whatever you do, take responsibility. Why do you want somebody else to approve and say well done or badly done, etc., etc.? So this is one of the first things. Solicitation of outward things and separate silent self from active nature. It must identify itself with the immobile spirit and live in the silence. It must arrive at an inner activity, Naishkarmya. So this is the Akshar Brahma. So sometimes people come and ask, they ask, what is it that if I join the ashram, what will I get? So my answer is, whatever you have will be taken away. What does it mean? I said, you can't claim anything, including wife, husband, children. Are you ready? That's what mother says, it's a great adventure. If you're not ready, then you're not ready. But yoga is like that. See, what was left with Arjun in the end? Nothing. And he is among the greatest, I must say, I mean, not only a devotee, but an instrument inseparable with Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna uses the word as Nar Narayan. He is the inseparable with Sri Krishna. At the end, what is left? As they are climbing, even Draupadi goes, all of them go, but, you know, that's the whole thing we have to remember. Now comes that one of the verses there. An understanding without attachment in all things, a soul self-conquered and empty of desire. Man attains by renunciation a supreme perfection of Naishkarmya. So here the Gita and Sannyas seems to be saying the same thing. Empty your desire. Now whether desire will become empty by leaving an object or by leaving the desire is the moot question. Do I need to leave the object, dry up my senses? Should I eat the samosa or not eat the samosa? That is the question. The answer is renounce the desire. More difficult, because when things are there in front, so he is saying the ideal of renunciation of a self-conquered stillness, spiritual passivity and freedom from desire is common to all the ancient wisdom. This is the common thing. Desire and divine don't go together. And in Pondicherry, you cannot live without making a choice between the wine and the divine. Best quality, both are available. And sometimes very close to each other. You make a choice, up to you. So here comes the ideal of renunciation of a self-conquered stillness, spiritual passivity and freedom from desire is common to all the ancient wisdom. The Gita gives us its psychological foundation with an unsurpassed completeness and clearness. It rests on the common experience of all seekers of self-knowledge that there are two different natures. Now comes the secret. That one is the lower nature, the two birds, that's the same thing in the Upanishad. That there is the secret of one where you are absorbed in it and you are completely involved in it, and the other is where you are inwardly completely free. There is a famous story of Rishi Agastya, worth remembering, because Rishi Agastya is one of Sri Aurobindo's previous, we may say, most likely. So there are two demons, Vatapi and his brother, and they would call people and cook things for them. And what he used to do is, he had developed learned the art of reviving the dead. So he would kill his brother, serve them meat of his brother. And when people eat, not knowing what it is, after they've eaten, suddenly he will revive the mantra. So it's a symbolic story, okay? So this fellow will come out bursting the abdomen and they will die. And these two asuras used to take great joy in killing. So one day, Agastya Rishi landed up to teach them a lesson. So he did the same thing. Served him meat. He ate it. After eating, he said, Vatapi, now come out with the mantra. Nothing happened. Again he called. Nothing happened. So Agastya Rishi says, actually, I have digested him. Now you see the difference. That you are untouched. It's a story which points out he is so untouched that it doesn't make a difference. It is not he who has eaten, it is given to Brahma. You can't call him back from there. So this is there are several stories like that, but basic idea is that there are two natures. There is the lower self of the obscure mental, vital and physical nature. This is what we all know. And then there is the higher Akshar Brahma. This part that beyond the lower nature, Trigunas, is ultimately the divine. But the beauty of the Gita is speaks of the divine nature. Sri Krishna says, my own nature. So there is a divine nature. There is a divine personality. Meaning thereby that there is a possibility in a human consciousness to embody that divine nature. The Gita doesn't explicitly say so. Because everything has come from the divine. At least for me, this used to be my big question, that if everything is all Maya and divine is impersonal, then how do I have feelings? How do I have thought? How do I have passions? How do I have... Where has it come from? It has to have ultimate origin from the divine. So Gita was so beautiful that it has all come from the divine. Bhagavat also says that. That's why the divine personality of the Godhead. What we have is a diminished portion of that reality. So there is a chance that this can be transmuted. Though the Gita doesn't take us to that level. It takes us to the door of the highest secret and leaves us there. And there is, few lines below, and there is the higher nature and self of our spiritual being, self-possessed and self-luminous, but in our ordinary mentality, inaccessible to our experience. So the Gita speaks of it, and the Vedas in their origin, when they speak about Diti and Aditi, speak about it. But in between, when we look at the Upanishads and the Vedanta, they don't speak about it. They are like, world is a, there is the nature and you have to come out. Sankhya speaks of it. All of them cut off. If you are in the world, you are in bondage. But there is a way that you can be in the world but not off the world, which is how Tyaga. But there is something still greater. You can be in the world, but as divine is in the world. That's the ultimate, which we see hinted in Ishopanishad and the Gita and Shurbindo. So, while we are laboring in this, at times we get glimpses of this greater thing within us, but we are not consciously within it. We do not live in its light and calm and illimitable splendor, like intuition which suddenly comes, or a sense of that exaltation which comes from within, even trickling into this lower nature. The first of these two very different things is the Gita's nature of the three gunas. We have read about it. And few lines below. So that's why the insistence. Its seeing of itself is centered in the ego idea. So first thing is, he's describing what lower nature is. Ego idea, its principle of action is desire born of ego. And the knot of ego is attachment to the objects of the mind and sense and the life's desire. So the moment we question, what am I going to get out of it? Then we are not ready for the higher life. One has to abandon even the idea that I'll get moksha. In fact, Bhagavatam says that and Sri Aurobindo says in Synthesis of Yoga. Even the highest lure that I will get liberation from the cycle of birth and death, this is the last illusion. Until you get out of that, you are still trapped. So this where he is reminding us. The other greater power, the inevitable constant result of all these things is bondage, settled subjection to a lower control, absence of self-mastery, absence of self-knowledge. The other greater power and presence is discovered to be nature and being of the pure spirit, unconditioned by ego, that which is called in Indian philosophy self and impersonal Brahman. So then he describes the difference. Sharan Akshar, we have read about that. Now we come to page 530, where he is describing something very beautiful. So we are being asked to cast away all that belongs to the dynamics of the ignorance and yet act in the world. How? By becoming completely full of the divine. In the Gita, the language is Brahma Bhuya. You are so full of the divine That's not you who are doing anything. There's a very nice song, bhajan by Dwijendra Lal Roy. Sri Aurobindo has translated some of his bhajans. Dilip Kumar Roy was, I think, either his grandson or nephew, I'm forgetting. So one of his bhajans is, he says, Sokali Tomar Iksha, and then he says, next line, suddenly I realize there are Calcuttans sitting here and they'll catch my Bengali. So I shouldn't, but the other line I remember, so I'll tell the, so the other line is, Tomar Kormo, Tumi Koroma, Loke Bole Koryami. So basically it is like that he is so full of mother. He says, you are the doer. And what are you doing? Your work. People think I am the doer and I am doing it. That is the beauty, that is the state. He doesn't use the word Gita, but he is living in that truth, that Brahma Bhuya. When you are so full of the divine, that whatever goes through you is impelled by the divine, because no more that egoistic strain is there. And few lines below, when the para starts, that is what is called becoming Brahman, Brahma Bhuya. Why he is using the word becoming? Being Brahman is that impersonal. Now Brahman is everything. So Brahman has become all this. So there is in Brahman a power which has become all this. How has Brahman become all this? So there he is saying, becoming Brahman, it is to put off the lower mental, vital, physical existence and to put on the pure spiritual being. Now we see how far Gita is taking us to the doorstep of transformation. It's not talking of the transformation of instruments, because that would have gone beyond. But it is reminding us this possibility. This can best be done, now comes the important sutra, by the intelligence and will, buddhi. So something is given to us as a tool. So the intelligent will in us can have two movements. One is outward and downward. That we are discussing people, the worst kind of thing. Then we are discussing events. Then in a, how they are impacting our everyday life. That way. My life of the ego, how it is impacting. So we are discussing things purely based from the egocentric point of view, based on our, you know, pleasures and pains and things like that. So that is the movement of the buddhi, which is turned outward and inward, downward. The other is the same buddhi which is given to man. It can turn inward and upward. Inward into taking all this experience, how I can turn all these things into greater closeness with the divine. If everything is being snatched away, instead of lamenting, some people say, why is divine doing this to me? Maybe he wants you all by yourself to have a nice meal out of you alone. Not with everybody. Others are not ready. So see, the same event. That you feel happy that he is taking me close, cutting off the bonds that I couldn't cut. That's exactly what Sri Aurobindo says when he enters the jail. And what was his bondage? His bondage was he wanted freedom of country. No other, not wife or family or any other outer. So he says, Sri Aurobindo, that to Sri Krishna, that why have you put me in the prison? Because after all, I was wanting nothing except the freedom of the country. And then Sri Krishna tells him, wait and see. And then what does he tell him? He says, the bonds that you did not have the power to cut, I have cut it for you. That is the hallmark of spiritual life. It's not like, if we seek protection, divine will give us. But that's not the spiritual life. That is a kind of religious relation with the divine, and within the limits allowed, it will happen. But within the limits. But to give oneself completely. So that's where he says that it has to turn away from the things of the lower existence and first and foremost from its effective knot of desire. From our attachment to the objects pursued by the mind and the senses. One must become an understanding, unattached in all things, asakt buddhihi sarvatra, vigat spraha. So one is not seeing things from how they are, my personal perspective. When mother would visit this Kirot's house and up the stairs, and on the side there is a small little, I mean, you can't even make out there is a room like that. Like below the stairs, what do you make? You know, some place for things to be put there. And there is a door there. So once mother went there, suddenly Gangadharanji, you must have heard about him. What lovely, you know, 108 names of Sri Aurobindo, and he had supramental experiences. He was a very ordinary boy from nearby, near Pondicherry. One of the places, villages in Tamil Nadu. And how he came at a very young age, and how he was, you know, his people wanted him back because they were about to file a case on Sri Aurobindo. But he was so moved. And when mother comes, she sees him there, because he's all, mother is coming, so with folded hand. He says, where are you? So he says, I am staying here, mother. Mother goes inside the room. She scolds Amrita. How have you kept him here? And Amrita doesn't know what to say. But Gangadharanji says, no, no, mother, I am very happy. I'm very happy here. This is the sign of true spiritual life. And not I must get this, I must get a bigger house, I must get a better place. Divine may give it. But those whom he loves, he says, I am your place. Dwell in me wherever you are. So this is the difference. Again, it's not a taboo to ask all this, but one must know the difference between the true spiritual life and the ordinary life. That brings with it, or it makes possible, the subjection of our lower and the possession of our higher self, a position dependent on complete self-mastery, secured by a radical victory and conquest over our mobile nature. So it becomes that person is Jitatma, wherever you place him. That's how we see in Mira's life. No, she says that Karna Fakiri Fir Kya Dille Giri Sada Magan Me Rehna Di. She says, one day if you make me sleep on the floor, I am happy. If you let me sleep on a nice Dunlop cot, I am happy. She's not like an ascetic saying, no, no, this I will not sleep, I'll get attached. She says, one day if I don't have anything to braid my hair and they are just flowing because I have nothing to take care of them, I am happy. But if one day I get a bead of pearls which I can put in my hair, I am happy, because they are both your gifts. That's Radha's prayer. So she is taking, whereas sannyasi will say, no, no, I can't touch it, I'll get attached. No, I have to wear this kind of clothes, this kind of dress. I have to walk like that. When somebody in Delhi ashram, one Naga sannyasi, so he would, before he would take the next step, the disciple will put a palm leaf. Then he would step on it, because he's not supposed to step on earth. So whatever be the logic, I don't know. So after his talk was over, so Surendranath Johar says in his inimitable style, he says, everything is fine, but aren't you too attached to your detachment? I have to be like this. I have to wear this kind of cloth. I have to do this. Where is the I? What time to think about it? So this is what is Jitatma. So he says, renunciation is the way to this perfection, and the man who has thus inwardly renounced all is described by the Gita as the true sannyasin. So sannyasi is not somebody in a particular robe, he is not eating, not doing anything, and therefore he, but because the word usually signifies as well an outward renunciation, or sometimes even that alone, the teacher uses another word, tyaga, to distinguish the inward from the outward withdrawal, and says that tyaga is better than sannyas. So here comes the first important divergence. Okay. So, on page 531, the one thing needed is a complete inner quietism, and that is all the Gita's sense of Nishkarma. So it says, not that you are not doing action, Nishkarma, but an inner quietude. You are not restless for action. At the same time, you are not attached to action. You are not attached to sitting quietly. You are engaged in action, but with a changed inner state. And why the Gita says this? If we ask why this reservation, if both are same, let Arjun go wherever he wants to. Because this question may come. So he says, if we ask why this reservation, why this indulgence to the dynamic principle when our object is to become the pure self and the pure self is described as inactive, akarta, the answer is that inactivity and divorce of self from nature are not the whole truth of our spiritual release. Now comes the whole meaning of Brahma Bhuya, that the divine is in the world, everywhere, in all things. He is the source, he is the sustainer, he is the preserver, he is the destroyer, he is in everything. So this is only a partial truth. We have to get at the complete truth. So it stresses on equality first as a basis. Okay. So how do we go about on the same page? Last 12, 15 lines. The impersonal self is silent. We too must be inwardly silent. Impersonal, withdrawn into the spirit. The impersonal self looks on all action as done not by it, but by Prakriti. It regards with a pure equality all the working of her qualities, modes and forces. The soul, impersonalized in the self, must similarly regard all our actions as done not by itself, but by the qualities of Prakriti. It must be equal in all things. Sarvatra. So this is the thing that, you know, we react, we are too judgmental, we are all the time looking at the externals, but we have to see these things. Well, this is the nature of lower nature, it's Rajagun, it's, you know, that's how it is. And then it gives us still greater secret, few lines below. We are asked to impose on the intelligence and will the attitude of sacrifice. So what is this sacrifice? Not the external sacrifice. All our action inwardly changed and turned into an offering to the Lord of Nature. To the being of whom she is the self-power, so Prakriti. Now here comes Sri Aurobindo's own lovely, you know. He is not, you will not see Shakti openly being told in the Gita. But see, Krishna says, my Prakriti, so Prakriti. So it is the nature of the Lord. Lord also has a nature. So he is reminding us, so Prakriti, the Supreme Spirit. Even we have eventually to renounce all into his hands, to abandon all personal initiation of action. Sarva Arambha Parityagi, Sarva Sankalpa Sannyasi. These are terms which have come already. So meaning thereby, one is not moved to act by any desire, idealism, etc. Action happens and develops. Of course, hunger is there, you go and eat food, definitely. But the initiation must come from inside and it should be offered to the divine, not because of the pulls which are all the time pulling us apart. Sarvarambh. To keep our natural selves only as an instrument of his works and his purpose. These things have been already explained. Okay. Page 532. 7-8 lines from above. How? Now this is, Sri Krishna is once again. How? Having attained this perfection, one thus attains to the Brahman, hear from me, O son of Kunti. That which is the supreme concentrated direction of the knowledge. See, this is sometimes there are some small little things in the Gita, in every scripture, which are very amazing. Now, Sri Krishna is addressing whom? Arjuna. He addresses him by different names. Most of them reflect his quality. Arjuna itself means the fair one, fair in the inner sense. Now, here he is not saying, listen to this, O Atman. He's saying, O son of Kunti. He's discarding nothing. Kaunteya. That's how it is called in Sanskrit. Kaunteya. So all these things form an integral truth of our nature, of our whole being. It's not that this is to be caught as the last word, but Everywhere we'll see that he brings the whole thing into perspective. The supreme, okay. The knowledge meant here is the yoga of the Sankhyas, Gyan, Yoga, Sankhya Nam, and then a few lines below. The Brahman indeed is both for the Upanishads and the Gita, all that is and lives and moves. The Upanishad which described Brahman as the fourfold Brahman. Pragya, then you know, Susupti, then Hiranyagarbha, the dreaming self, the outward waking self. So all this is the fourfold Brahman. The Supreme Brahman is all that moves or is stable, and his hands and feet and eyes and heads and faces are on every side of us. This is so beautiful, you know. This I remember, this is so lovely that wherever one may be, whatever situation, circumstances, you may be alone, you may be in the middle of the most dangerous situations, but if we can just remember Mother is with me, it's the ultimate tonic. I've had such experiences, and it's like she's there. What is there? Fear just passes away, because this is a fact. But we cloud ourselves. That's where ignorance lies. That I don't know. Is she really there? It is written there, but I don't know. Have I realized? All this nonsense will come, and it'll spoil the whole thing. So he is reminding us. What is he reminding us? Few lines below. All this is Brahman, says the Upanishad. Yastu sarvani bhutani atme va bhut vijanata. Impersonality. So what is impersonality which is spoken about? But still there are two aspects of this all. His immutable eternal self that supports existence, which is what is the Akshara Brahma, and his self of active power that moves abroad in the world movement, the Purushottama. And few lines below he says, impersonality is a denial of limitation and division. So moving Shar, Akshar and the Purushottama. So he says impersonality is a denial of limitation and division, and the cult of impersonality is a natural condition of true being. It means I am free. It's not I am limited by my impersonality. No, I have taken sannyas. I am sorry. I can't sit on a chair. I can't wear another kind of dress. That's not what impersonality is about. Impersonality is freedom from all the limitations that the ego self has created for us. And if one is really in impersonality, one finds the friend everywhere. One of the things, you know, otherwise, oh, I have come to this place. Who are the natives, locals? And people start, you know, they are like this, this. All this will cease completely. Because everybody is a child of the divine, and you will grow. Where you have to fight, you will fight. But not with any hatred or anything. But for only his will. Not that one should fight and start a Gita war. Impersonality is a denial of limitation and division. Division, very important. And the cult of impersonality is a natural condition of true being, an indisposable, indispensable preliminary of true knowledge, and therefore a first requisite of true action. Look at how Tulsidas describes Lord Rama. It's not for nothing that he is, you know, revered like this. Whom does he embrace and accept? One of the first, if you want to say, not communism as we understand, but the whole gospel of brotherhood and communism is captured in this one sentence. Ganika ajamil vyad gid gajad khaltare gana. He says Ganika is a prostitute, if you want to use a modern language. Ajamil, the butcher, the sinner. Vyad, the one who is killing, hunting the birds. Gida, those who live on the, you know, scavengers. Vyad, Gida, Gajad, who is the story of the elephant who was caught by. Khal, the dusta, the sinners. Everyone he accepts in his entourage and walks together. That is the supreme image. Even you see what Shiva, when it is described as all kinds of people. And that's what people don't understand. Both Auroville and Ashram represent that totality. If you start purging and say only the good people will stay, at the end you will say that there are not even enough good people. Because goodness is a mask. After some time you will say nobody will stay. Why? Because nobody is good enough. That cannot be the method. Any opening should be enough. That's all that is required. Whatever else is there. And of course, Sri Aurobindo and the mother would take all kinds of beings and creatures because they have to work on everyone. Whom will they say, this is not mine? No, no, no. He is not mine. Why? Because he doesn't offer flowers to me. That is not the approach. There is, of course, the highest approach, but all are fundamentally, they belong to the divine. So that's what is being reminded to us. All this is Brahman, says the Upanishad. All this is Vasudeva, says the Gita. The Supreme Brahman is all that moves or is stable, both, and his hands and feet are everywhere. It's such a wonderful way to diffuse all quarrels. So if a lady shouts at you, maybe whoever you consider as, you know, your wife or whatever, so simply say, Mother Kali, Joy Ma, don't fight, argue, you will fall like Mahishasura. Simply see Mother Kali, Mother Durga, Mother Lakshmi, Annapurna. We have so many forms of the Divine Mother. Full of forms. Forms of gods are very few. Only Vishnu Bhagavan, all of them are like sitting quietly. Other gods, not much. But Devi is so many. So basically, that's what. Page 533. Imprisoned in personality, which means every time we have that identity printed on our visiting cards. I never had a visiting card, not because I had read the Gita, but I didn't believe in it. What is this Alok Pandey, and then, you know, write doctor and this nonsense. So till now people ask me, so when they ask, sir, your card, so I write and give them. So they say, you don't have a card. So I said, no. So once somebody said, I'll get a card printed for you. I said, please don't do it. It has taken me a long time to get rid of something. You want to get me back into... One is reminded of a story where someone took a visiting card of XYZ to a big man, okay, to Ma Anandamai. So Anandamai Mai, so he has to convey that card has too many degrees. So he says, Mother, some Vidwan has come to meet you. Man full of knowledge, you have so many degrees, no? So Anandamai Ma says, Avidya ki nagri mein Vidwan? This city of ignorance, there is some knowledgeable person who has come to meet me. So all these are simple ways that, you know, we are attached to this limited ego. Impersonality releases us. It's no more that Mr. So-and-so, I am this, and people should... As long as we have that, we may be big in the eyes of the world, but we are basically nothing and nobody in the eyes of the divine. He will deal with us just like with the whole creation from within he is dealing. So this is where the yoga comes. To lose ego... Last line on this page, 533, paragraph beginning from there. To lose ego and be this impersonal self, to become the impersonal Brahman in our consciousness is therefore the first movement of this yoga. So as long as we are still holding on to our personality, to our identity cards, to our degree, to our, you know, whatever it be, we are not really ready even to step into the yoga. And all the great teachers have said this. See, if you read the teachings of Christ, if you read, so this, Sri Krishna is putting it in great bold relief so that we understand, especially in India where there was too much of this otherworldliness that came in. He says that's not the hallmark, because then you have another identity. Param Pujya Mahamana Sannyasi Ji Ekso, and worst is if you write Ekso Atvar Sri, that means you are not well known enough. Why all this is required? When somebody asked about Sri Aurobindo, we want to put a honorific before your name other than Sri, like Sri is honorific, so we want to put things like Maharishi, Mahayogi, And Sri Aurobindo had to reply, Shri is not an honorific, it is part of the name. It is his inner name. And he says, let me remain pure and simple Sri Aurobindo. You don't see anything. Mahayogi, Maharishi, because each of this is a limitation. Each of them, because what the divine put in honorific and goes, I am the divine. He says instead, I am everything. I am in everyone. I am everywhere. So we'll stop here and next week. I'm just relishing because now comes the main juice. So we'll go step by step slowly. Okay. Chema.